Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
I feel like he needs to step up more than he has. And I think he needs to help us, you know, just like everybody else. And I think he's gonna need to put a little bit of weight on his shoulders here, and it's time to step up, make some throws, and do some things. And but he needs help, you know. And look, I told him out there, he knows this, but some of that stuff, we're getting these holding calls. Well, it's because he's drifting back in the pocket 10 yards deep. That's not fair to those guys either. And if you hang on to the ball, so it's like I told you, this is a collective effort now. Everything goes hand in hand. But I want to see him step up. I do, because I think he can do it.
Welcome back into One of These Years, our Detroit Lions podcast. I'm Chris Burke, joined by Nick Baumgartner, who you can also hear on The Beat with Brendan Quinn. You probably know that. I'm sure you've listened to that show before. But we just watched the Lions take a tough one against the Bengals. You heard Dan Campbell there talking about Jared Goff. That was fired up as we'd heard Dan Campbell since probably the introductory press conference when he was doing the biting kneecaps talk. And this was 100%. Pretty much just anger on Sunday after a 34-11 loss and everything. We mentioned it in our observations post up on the site at theathletic.com. Campbell took a lot of the blame himself. I think there was plenty to go around to both coordinators, and certainly, as you heard there, the quarterback again. I don't know. What's your takeaway from what we heard from Campbell on Sunday?
Yeah, it was an interesting day. And I think when we were sitting up there watching, you know, that mess, which is exactly what it was a disaster. Anyone who saw it, I mean, you're not disagreeing with what Campbell's assessment was, right? Like, it was a complete disaster. And I think the biggest takeaway, like he said, was, you know, they're not in this fight. In every other game they've played this season, you know, flaws or whatever, the Lions have been in these fights. They've been in these games long enough to sort of bother people and stay in them, as you've seen. And, you know, that's kind of how they play. And they cannot exist as a football team if they're not going to do the little things necessary to sort of keep themselves within an NFL game. And that, I think, was why this team's coming out of his ear. So what I'm thinking, and I think what, you know, we're talking about upstairs, is like, how is Campbell going to react? And what's his sort of approach going to be after this? We talked about this all year. What is his, you know, sort of mood, vibe, whatever, going to be like the first time this team really just craps the bed and just plays like shit? And that's what this was. What's it going to be? Is it going to be a Patricia, I got to coach it better and we got to get back to the film thing? Is it going to be a, you know, Caldwell type thing where we just don't really talk much about it and we try to stay even keel and we go forward? Or is it going to be Dan Campbell being Dan Campbell? And that's what we got. And I think that that's what I think that you needed to see. And I'm super interested to see where this goes. I think Dan Campbell, through 6 weeks, has proven to people who've paid attention that he's a genuine person who cares a lot about this project and this team. And when they do not represent themselves the way that he believes, you know, they're capable of, and that doesn't necessarily mean winning a game, I think he's going to let every guy on the team know it. And I think it was important that he let people know that he's not completely absolving Jared Goff either. And, you know, I know we'll talk about him more in a minute, but I want to get your thoughts too, Chris, on this, because we've talked so much about Campbell's reactions and the mood of the team and how they sort of go with him. This is a really delicate, interesting spot, I think. And it was going to be a challenge spot for him, I think, as a coach, more than anything else. Because, like, what are you going to do, man, when the first time your team really does, like, you know, not screw you, but really lay an egg, you know? Like, and I'm curious for your thoughts on kind of what we saw there.
Yeah, and I mean, like you said, everyone saw it. This was bad. Like it, and they hung in there in the first half, as Dan Campbell mentioned too. Like, the defense played fairly well in the first half. It was 10-0. They gave up the one shot play late. The defense held them in there. It was a game at halftime, and then they come out in the second half. They give up a touchdown. They had a 4th-and-1 and got called for a false start. Give up a field goal. Now it's 20-0. Their next possession starts with another false start, and at that point, you're like, well, they're just not even here today. This is different than the first five. I mean, and I said to you, it felt like Yeah. It felt like one of the Patricia games where they're just, get us to the end of this. Let's go home. Yes. That's what it felt like. And you're right. We haven't seen that. The sort of the staple of this team so far has been that they're, you know, Campbell kind of promised they weren't going to do that. That wasn't going to be them. And
yeah.
So you can understand his anger when that team showed up again and just kind of went through the motions. And we waited for a long time for him to come in for that press conference, too. It's usually like
yes,
a few minutes, 5 or 10 minutes. We were in there for like the entire end of the Vikings-Panthers game was on TV.
Yeah, it was like 25 minutes.
The start of overtime. It was a long time. And he said, you know, he really sort of let his team have it. That's what we heard from the players. You know, he told them how disappointed he was. And in himself, he took a lot of the blame himself. But again, a lot of the questions, as always, because it's the most important position in the game, came back to the quarterback. And right. That's where it was, you know, he had that soundbite we played you where, you know, a couple moments where Campbell didn't really hold back entirely. He was critical of Goff, and then a couple moments where he had to apologize to reporters for kind of snapping at them about their questions about Goff. Like, well, you get thinking about a replacement, and, you know, Goff playing well, how do you fix that? It's not Goff. Well, I'm sorry, it is Goff.
He but, like, you know, talked himself into something when Eric asked him something. I can't remember what he even asked, but Eric Woodyard asked him something, and Campbell started answering, and he was like, no. And he was like, wait, I didn't even say anything. And he's like, oh, wait, hang on. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it was, what was, I'm going to look for it now because it was.
Yeah, it was all over the place.
It was the slow starts on offense. That's Eric Woodyard asked. You know, you guys, because it's been, I think, 4 games now. They haven't scored a touchdown in the first half.
Yes, right.
And Eric asked, you know, how much of that is the quarterback, essentially? Is that Jared? Like, how much of that is Jared? Right. And Campbell said,
totally fair.
It has nothing to do with Jared. And then he took another beat and he said, well, that's not true. That's not true. But that's not all Jared. That was the clarification. It's not all Jared. It's all of us.
Yeah. Right.
And then, you know, later on, I think it was Dave Burkett asked another question, and that's when he went into the rant of like, well, he's back there and guys are missing assignments and he doesn't know where the hell his receivers are going to be. So what's he supposed to do? And then he clarified that with, but we also told him, you know, these sacks, you can't just keep dropping backwards.
Yeah. 20 steps.
That's why we're getting holding penalties. And so I think he's right. I think it is. It's everything. I mean, I think you see it. It's not just Jared Goff, but certainly what Jared Goff did on Sunday was not good enough. And to this point, through 6 games, and you and I talked about this after the game Sunday, and I wrote about it after the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you were trying to assess Jared Goff as like, can he be a guy who gets us through 2 or 3 seasons here? You're at game 6 and like, this guy is not good right now. He has no confidence. Right. He's not seeing the field. We can't run our offense. So I don't know. Like, what do you do here?
Well, I mean, I think that this is the time when we've talked about this. We talked about this after the game. Everyone in the Lions organization had, you know, when this trade was made, they brought Stafford in here. Or I'm sorry, Goff in here and traded Stafford. When that trade was made, everyone here knew that this was possible. You've seen Goff on tape. You've seen the struggles that he's had. You know, I'm sure, like we talked about last week, and I think you put it really well when I think I asked you, like, how do you think Holmes is sort of feeling? And I think, you know, disappointment was the word you used. And I thought that was probably perfect. And I think that was the emotion that Campbell sort of displayed. And frustration, too. But disappointment was really what sort of cut through for me, in that they're looking at him and being like, man, we gave you every single chance to come in here and build your confidence up. Hey, we could have given you more talent. Yes. We could have given you more help.
Right, that would have
helped. In that department, yes. Fair criticism. But in every other situation, we've been patient with you, right? We've tried to build you up, talk you up, do all these things, and you're doing nothing to give us anything on the other end, man. We got to get something here from you, because we're entering a situation where it's going to have to get, and maybe this has already happened, but now you're entering a situation, I think, where it's like, you have to start taking these next several weeks, whatever it is, whatever window you want to look at, and say, we have to decide. And I think for Jared Goff too, like that question you just asked, Chris, like, is he going to be a guy that we can reasonably get through another season with? And are fans even going to stay on board? And is the team going to stay on board? Is the team going to stay on board?
Right. Because
before we get too deep into golf, I do want to ask you this, because I think this ties into it. Like, we're not in the locker room after games, right? And we get to talk to guys, and it's kind of easy sometimes covering Campbell in this situation, because it's easy to tell how he's feeling, right? Like, he doesn't hide anything. He's always pretty open about that. But we're not in the locker room. Like, you mentioned, you know, some of these losses being Patricia losses, and it felt like that anyway. When you went to the locker room after one of those losses, guys were talking about where they're going to go eat a steak after the game, okay? Like, that's how it was. I don't know how it is when we go in there right now. I got a sense it's probably not that way. But, I mean, I got to say, like, if you keep going forward here and everybody looks up and says, like, the quarterback is screwing us, coach, do something about it, and nothing's getting done about it, you're going to have a harder time keeping that culture together. And that's sort of, what's your sort of vibe on where they're at in the locker room right now, where everything's at? Because I think right now this is a pretty critical spot in this whole thing. This is sort of what I see it as. I'm curious for your thoughts.
I mean, I think part of the reason that they talked about, or it seemed like Goff might be able to kind of help them weather the storm here, is because they knew it wasn't going to be very good at a lot of other spots. And so I think that's probably where they're at in the locker room for the most part, is that you could go to pretty much every position on the field Sunday and pick a guy and say, you did not play well enough.
Exactly.
And there were a couple guys, like Derek Barnes had a nice game. You know, Dan Campbell mentioned some of the younger guys, like he said he thought Tracy Walker played well again. And
he did.
You know, McNeil up front, and like a bunch of these young guys, that Jerry Jacobs hung in there, other than the couple, you know, Chase got him for a couple deep balls, but hung in there and played well. But for the most part, you know, this isn't like they're on the brink of pulling through here, and Goff's the only reason, you know, it's not like that. It's not like they have a playoff team and your quarterback gets hurt and you throw the backup out there and it all falls apart. Like, we're not in that spot. So I think that does buy Jared Goff a little bit of cushion and maybe buys the team a little bit of time to keep doing this and hoping Goff can figure it out. But where I would say that there probably is growing frustration, and you won't ever hear it, I don't think, and I don't know that they'd even say it to each other, but I have to imagine on that coaching staff, they're starting to feel it a little bit because, you know, Aaron Glenn's very critical of what he does and, you know, how he calls games and adjustments he needs to make or misses 100%. Or whatever.
No sacred cows with Aaron Glenn. He's objective on everything. Like 100%.
But let's be realistic about what he's facing.
I know.
If he's going into every game thinking, well, we got to give up three.
Right. Like,
this is not.
It's kind of hard.
Something you're going to pull off. And same thing like with Anthony Lynn. Like if he has to. They have talked for 2 weeks in a row now about how they have to take these play calls that Anthony Lynn wants to do. And he gave an example at the press conference last week. And I forget what the actual play call was, but it was 10 or 11 words. And he said, well, maybe we just call that rooster or something, whatever it was. It was like one word. Maybe we just call that one word and hopefully they can all visualize it then.
Do we have to shrunk that down to one letter? I mean, come on, guys.
What, and some of this is. And I asked Campbell Monday, like, who you keep talking about the missed assignments, you know, whose fault is that?
Yeah.
Is that and I think some of this is just that they have new receivers and young guys and a bunch of players that haven't played together. But at some point, your quarterback is responsible if your receivers are running all the damn plays out there, if they're not in the right spots, if he's throwing where he thinks guys are going to be and they're not there, if he's clearly not getting to his third and fourth reads, that's just not something he's going to do. So I don't know. They're very, very limited on what they can do offensively. And so I think that if the players haven't cracked yet, and I think for the most part they haven't, because I think they still like Jared Goff. I think he's still good in the locker room and at practices and all that.
Yeah.
This coaching staff has to be feeling some frustration level of what can we do here? Because this is it. This is what we have to work with.
Right.
And it's not good. So how do we fix it?
I think that's the million-dollar question. And it's like, I heard from people on Twitter, and I'm sure you did too, probably more than I did even, that, like, you know, people were like frustrated that Campbell was making excuses for Goff. And I was like, well, listen, I would say this. I don't think he was making excuses for Goff. I think he actually put that in pretty good context. And I honestly think that right there is probably about as far as you're going to see an NFL. McVay went after him pretty hard last year, and that didn't help anything.
Which might be why the situation is right.
That's about as hard a line as I think you're going to see an NFL coach go after a quarterback after a game. And he took the time to sort it out. And I think his answer was exactly what it should have been. He needs to do more. They need him to do more. He's making a ton of money. He's eating up a ton of cap. He's the quarterback. Like, they have a lot of problems on offense that are like you just said, like guys having trouble remembering things because they're shuffling guys in and out. Hey, there's been one constant on that offense, right? Goff. Be a leader. Be a quarterback. Help them out. Do something. Figure it out. Adjust. If you and Hockenson weren't on the same page on a wheel route into the flat, adjust on the fly. He was wide open by 12 yards. Put the ball in his hands so he can go score a touchdown. Be a quarterback. Like Campbell said, he needs to, what did he say at one point? He needs to go out there and do some things. Like, that is what I would say.
He needs to do anything.
Like, anything, man. Like, anything. There was one throw he makes at one point in the game, which I thought was like his best throw of the year. He stands in, takes a hit, and throws one down the seam to St. Brown, I think it was, for like 15 yards.
Was that the interception?
I think that was like a holding or something brought it back. But it was a completion, and it was like, okay. And like, where is that? That's doing something. Standing in there, making a throw because, hey, it looks like he might come open. I'm going to give him a chance. I'm going to take a pretty nasty hit here, but whatever. I'm not going to spin out, run 15 yards in the backfield, take a sack, or turn it over. And I think that you go further than that, and his answers, Chris, to some of these questions on what happened there are horrible. Be a better football player, period. That's what Jared Goff needs to do. This needs to be do or die time for his career right now. Like, these next 6 to 8 weeks, his career is on the line. That's how he has to look at it. The entire NFL sees what's happening here with him. He was a former number one pick. Okay, like, it has to be do or die. There can be no stone left unturned from now until the rest of the year for him, because he's been a mess, and a lot of this is correctable. A lot of it is correctable, and he needs to start correcting it, and I think that that's the long and short of it.
Yeah, the press conference point you make is an interesting one, because I don't want to compare. It's unfair to compare him to Stafford, because like Stafford, you'd be like, what'd you have for dinner on June 13th, 2014? And he'd tell you how the meal was.
Yeah, right.
Oh, Goff, though, he had the 4th and 4 right after he overthrew Hockenson. So he had the two plays in a row in that game. It was in the second quarter. They ran the like pick play wheel route to Hockenson that I don't know if it would have gone for a touchdown, but it certainly would have been like 15 or 20 yards. Chunks.
Yeah, right.
He threw it into this bench, and then after the game said, he at least implied that Hockenson ran the wrong route, right?
Yes, he did.
He said we weren't on the same page. So then you get the 4th and 4. That play, Swift leaks out of the backfield, wide open at the sticks. He never even turns to look for him. Instead, bails out of the pocket. They get called for holding. Goff says he saw the holding flag, and so he threw the ball away, thinking it'd just be 4th and 14, and they'd punt.
Right.
That's not how penalties work.
Yeah, right.
That's not how it works.
That's not how any of this works.
And so, like, so I get it. Like, every once in a while, you're going to have those moments where, like, Tom Brady, last year thought it was 3rd down, and it was 4th down. He's the greatest quarterback in NFL history. So sometimes this stuff happens, but we're sort of seeing a pattern here from Goff where either the mental processing isn't there and he's telling us it wasn't there, or he's the Hockenson thing. Hockenson kind of ran the wrong. I think he might have ran the wrong route. And the pick last week in Minnesota where he just stared down the slant, threw it right to a linebacker. Well, the linebacker, that was just a great play. Nothing you can do there. This is not.
Well,
this is a lot of this is on you, man. Like at some point, and I don't know. Again, I don't want to compare him to Stafford and how Stafford handled the press conferences, and certainly we're not getting the full picture of, you know, how Jared Goff goes back and looks at his performance in those press conferences a half hour after the game. But what we are hearing from him is not encouraging to me that he's going to figure out these issues. It's not, well, I had another guy on the flat. I didn't get around to him. I thought I had more time or whatever. I had to get the hell out of there and throw the ball away because I thought we had it down. We didn't. It's like the processing is just not there. And I think, I don't know. This is why the Rams didn't want Goff anymore, right? Like,
yes.
This is the quarterback he was at the end there. And again, mm-hmm. to go back to that Holmes point, they were hoping he could get back to being like 2018 Jared Goff.
Right.
And he's not. And so that, like, is that the end of your evaluation? Like, are you done? How much more?
I don't know. Right. Are you like, done or not?
I mean, I guess I'm asking you here too. Like,
yeah, I know.
What's the window that you need to evaluate this when you're trying to fix a quarterback?
Yeah, I think that, again, like, there's some whistling through the graveyard, as my buddy Brady Hoke used to say, going on here with
record-setting coach
Brady Hoke. There's some whistling through the graveyard in that he's, and I think the Lions have been doing some of that too, in that they've done so much work in trying to talk confidence into him that, and I think that some of these answers are, they seem like deflections on, I just screwed up, guys, like, sorry, you know, or whatever, where he's got to come up with some other answer. And that's not going to go well for anybody either. But yeah, no, I think that that's the big question is, it's like, what's the, how long do you need? I frankly don't think you need more than a year. In this situation, I really don't. And I think that Campbell was asked, I guess, like, has it been, have you had enough time to judge him or whatever, right? And he said, no, I don't think so yet. No one here has said that they don't think they're going to have enough time to judge him in a 17-game season. I mean, like, I think you can, yes, I do think you can reasonably judge what he is and isn't giving you, and it has nothing to do with your win and loss record. And frankly, I don't even know how much it has to do with, like, the overall box score, whatever. Like, these are situational things that we're talking about right here that we bring up every week that he fails them in. Every single week. That's the Hockenson play, situation, that's a call. That was something you schemed into the game plan that you waited for. You had it. You dialed it up. It was open, and your quarterback threw it into the stands. And there's a guy standing there on the play looking at him like, what was that all about? Right? Like, everyone's like, what just happened there? Like, there's two or three of those in every game. In this last game, they didn't result in red zone turnovers. In some games, they have. Like, it's not the full end of, like, what's the box score say? What's that say? Is it a win or a loss? No, it's situational. Are you helping the team do anything? Or are you just out there taking snaps until the game ends? The Lions have not played with a lead for 1 second this year. Am I right? Is that the correct stat?
That's right. Incredibly, that is correct.
That is, you want to reflect something on your quarterback? There you go. He's not assertive. He's timid, right? Like, all the things that we've seen from him before. There's no point in talking about anything else in those critical spots. He is failing them. He's failing them. He needs to do more. Campbell said that. I thought it was a perfect, what he said was perfect. They need more from him. He needs to shoulder more. He needs to do more. Like, bare minimum, and looking around and being like, well, the team sucks. What do you want me to do? Ain't gonna cut it. I don't think on this group, in this town, or anywhere else probably in the NFL, to be honest with you. I just don't, something needs to change there. And I think he needs to, ramp it up to some degree, because this is not good enough. And I don't think that anyone is going to defend that as we go forward here.
I mean, even right. And it's even the little things like that. That one to me, the Hockenson throw, like, those are the ones that I look at and say, well, this guy just has no confidence
at all.
Like, that's a throw where you're like just trying to float it out there and hope it lands where it's supposed to go.
Yeah,
and it
you're
didn't,
aiming.
And,
yeah.
And
right.
So now what? But like, even the little stuff, you know, the turnovers, obviously, Campbell's talked a lot about those. You can't have them because it kills them. But, like, they get the turnover on Sunday. I think if I've got the order of plays here, they got the turnover. You know, they get the, of course, they get called for taunting as Orowari is running it back. And then Goff, I think right after that was when Goff took that sack where he bailed out of the pocket and ran back to, like, the 50, trying to get away from pressure, which never works.
No!
And so now you're out of field goal range, too. And so just these little things that are not...
disasters. Game-changing plays,
him.
Yeah.
I guess the other thought that I had, though, I'm curious what you think, is I wonder... We've talked a lot about the reasons they wanted Goff here, and I think that they trusted him to stay on the field. They figured they knew what they were getting off the field. I wonder if when they were doing their evaluations, they obviously loved Penei Sewell. They liked a lot of these draft picks. If they looked at the quarterbacks and said, if we draft a guy, he's going to have to come in and start. We cannot do that to a rookie with the way this team is going to be. And I kind of wonder how much that played it. Like, I don't know that this is a lot better with Mac Jones playing quarterback for you right now.
Or Justin Fields. No, it's probably worse.
It's probably more exciting. It's more entertaining.
But I don't know that the team's a lot better.
So I kind of wonder how much that went into the evaluation this year. If let's just get through this season. We'll get into the next draft and we'll figure out quarterback then, because if we can't put a young guy into this spot, it will just kill him. And we've seen that happen. I mean, it happened to Joey Harrington, I guess, if you want to go there, but it happens all the time in the NFL. And so I don't know. That was just something that popped into my head. Like, they're just using Goff as like the sacrificial lamb for 2021 come hell or high water. And that's why we haven't seen David Blau yet. And that's why they haven't really talked about Tim Boyle yet. So
I think that it's been super interesting. And that's like the elephant in the room with the Lions, right? Like, they don't, they're never going to say that. Like, Holmes, what would it do for Brad Holmes to say, we're bringing Jared Goff in here to be a bridge until we can get Sam Howell ready? Like, what benefit would that have been for him to say that last February? Like, so I do. And I've said this a bunch of times when we've talked, every time Holmes talks about quarterbacks, I think that he's, I don't want to call him a liar or whatever, right? But like, he's playing the game. I think he's playing the NFL game. I think that you have to, look, you're bringing Goff in here. You want him motivated. You want him to be part of this. And I think that the thing that they pitched to him was like, change our mind, change everyone's mind. Don't be more than a bridge, you know, be more than the person who just gets us from point A to point B. If that's what everyone thinks this is, we're not putting any like absolute cap on any of this. Like, change our mind. That's the opportunity. That's all they've given you. You're not changing anyone's mind. And I think that when Campbell says he being Goff is no different than any other player on the team, I take that as in a real world situation, then that means he has to be no different than Tyrell Williams, Rashad Perriman, or any of these other guys you gave chances to this offseason, and whether or not it's going to work out for them here. And I know that the quarterback has a lot more on his plate and all this, but it's a massively important decision. You've got terrific draft capital coming up here. You have to look at every single quarterback in this upcoming draft and the next one. And it has to be, I mean, at the top of every decision, right? Like, it has to be toward the top or the top of everything
gotta
you do.
It's got to be the top. You got to figure this out first. And yeah,
I agree.
Holmes knows that. That's the whole reason he pushed for Goff in L.A. Like, that was his argument. Well, we got a good team. We can't win without our quarterback. So if this isn't your quarterback, you can do all you want to the rest of the roster. You're only going to get so far. You've got to find the quarterback. Like, you've got to find the guy. And I think, you know, you mentioned you had people on Twitter suggesting that Campbell should have gone further with his comments. Yeah. I've seen people wonder if he's been going too far and criticizing Goff too much and should keep it behind closed doors instead. And I don't think that that's true. I mean, I think he's doing it. I think some of it Sunday was just raw emotion. Like I said, he kind of had those couple moments where he was like, no, that's not true. Well, that is true. And so I think he was just running pretty hot on Sunday. But I also think, and we talked about this last week, I think he knows that the stuff he's going to say in these press conferences is going to get back to his players.
Of course. They're listening
and
to
so
all of it.
When he's out there saying, well, we need Goff to put more of this on his shoulders. We need him to play better. We need him to whatever else he said there. I think he's just trying to lay down the gauntlet a little bit for this guy and say, look, it wasn't a great situation for us. We had to trade our quarterback. We had to figure it out. It's not a great situation for you being on this team, but like you said, if you want to be a starting quarterback in the NFL, this is it. Prove that you deserve to be it, because otherwise this contract, however they get out of it, is going to be the last big one Jared Goff gets, and he's going to be a one-year deal guy for the rest of his career,
right, 100%.
Because no one trusts him to be a starter anymore. So show us, Brad Holmes believes that you have more than this in you. We like what you give us in the locker room. Show us something, like you said. This cannot be it. If this is it, we're done. Like, if there's more in there, time is now to show it to us, because we can't get through this season, let alone next season, yeah, with the offense looking like this.
And I would also add, like, because I thought you brought up a good point about, and it was interesting, the people maybe thinking that Campbell was going too far with the criticism. And I understand some of that, I guess, you know, to a degree. I do, because sometimes that happens, and the quarterback is a different position, and there's a lot on that person's shoulders, so much more than anybody, you or me or anybody else, can ever understand, right? Everyone understands that in football, and it's almost this, like, unwritten thing with probably writers and everybody else, I think. Like, the quarterback has a lot going on. You can't just default to blaming everything on the quarterback, right? Like,
right,
that's a
right,
very easy thing to do, and it happens far too often in football. But I think it's important for a coach like Dan Campbell, who I think does have the credibility to make that assessment publicly, because it's true and right. And I think that we talked, you know, when we did that story on him in the summer, you know, I talked to Drew Henson, and he talked quite a bit about, you know, when he got to the Cowboys, Dan Campbell taught Drew Henson the offense. He taught him the checks. He taught him the calls. He taught him everything. He knew what his reads were. He knew how to read coverages. Dan Campbell understands how an offense is supposed to work, and more importantly, how a quarterback's supposed to play, what he's doing, when he's doing it, what risk is good, what risk isn't. I think that was refreshing, frankly, to see, because he did play poorly. Poorly. And he's one of 11 in a way, and he's not. But when your quarterback plays poorly, and everybody else gets blamed for everything else, and he's the one who never gets blamed, and he sits up there and says, well, you know, we weren't on the same page. I think if I'm in the locker room, I'd want to hear my coach say that the quarterback needs to be better. And I think that that's totally fair, and I don't think we hear it enough, frankly, in some settings, and I think that that was a good note. I wouldn't suggest he dumps on him, like, you know, throws a chair or anything, right, you know, but, like, yeah. I wanted to make that point today because I thought that was different. I think Campbell does have credibility in that arena, and I think he should use it. I think that's what makes him unique as a coach, and I thought that was good to see, because I think it needed to be said in some level. Whether or not it was severe enough for some is a different story, but, like, I think something there needed to be addressed.
And again, it is definitely harder for us to get a read on sort of how Jared Goff is processing all this, because we see him on Sundays. He does the press conference after the game. We see him. He talks to the media on Wednesday for about 10 minutes, and that's pretty much it. We see him, you know, out at practice for 20 minutes Wednesday through Friday, but we're not in the locker room. We can't see how he's interacting. We can't talk to him off the record right now.
Right,
you know?
Yeah, right.
And like with Stafford, you know, we had a lot of years where we were able to do that, and he did not give two shits about what people wrote about him or said about him.
No, never cared.
Yeah. I don't know that Jared Goff is the same way. Even Michael Brockers said, someone asked Brockers on Monday, does talk radio ripping on Goff, or, you know, all of us writing about how Goff's struggling, get to him? And Brockers said, well, you know, we're all humans. Like, imagine someone wrote that you were a terrible journalist.
Right.
It would bother you.
It would sting. Yeah,
and right. So, I mean, I think he, without saying, like, oh, Jared Goff just feels terrible about himself, I think he's at least admitting that he's aware of the talk. He certainly heard the people booing him when he, like, two-hopped a 10-yard throw to Kamaro Hodge in the fourth quarter.
Right. He's not immune to it, right?
Like, so I don't know. I mean, like, I guess my point is just that we're kind of guessing at where Jared Goff is at mentally, but the evidence suggests that he's not in a very good spot.
No.
And I don't know how you fix that
right
as the season's going. And if you can't fix that, that's, you're done. That's it. That's the answer about your quarterback.
And I think that, you know, to borrow another line from another old friend of mine, Urban Meyer, that's life in the big city, Jared Goff. I think that that's, and all those points are fair. And this is hard. This is a shitty situation for everyone involved, really. It's not easy. It's not ideal. But, like, you got to make the best of it. And the point you made earlier, Chris, about, like, this window right here for Goff is it. It's it. This is it. And he knows that. He has to know that. And I think that the pressure that goes into that is also something that we can't appreciate. You know, like, you and I and anybody else, like, we can't. Because we're not NFL quarterbacks going through this situation. We weren't first-round picks who were, you know, told by a franchise we were the greatest thing in the world and then given up on 2 years after I made a Super Bowl. We don't know what that's like, right? It's tough and difficult, and he's 27 years old, but that's life in the big city, and you're making 20 million. So I think that that's sort of how it has to go here. And I think that this season at large, the full season, the full picture, that's what you take. I think that people keep asking that. How much time have you had to judge Goff? You take the season, you know what I mean? And you address this fully and totally. You think about it all year, of course, and you have your conversations, but it gets addressed in January, February. I think that's what, that's the only thing, you know, really fair-wise they can do. However, and this would be maybe a segue, you talked about Blau earlier. I don't know if Blau's an option at all for anyone, but if Tim Boyle gets his hand healthy and Goff continues to miss opportunities like this over the next 3 or 4 weeks, do we see Tim Boyle? I don't think that would be the worst thing in the world necessarily, depending on how things are going, but I think it should at least be possible, right? Or an option if Goff continues to struggle.
Well, to me, this is, I mean, this is the conversation we've had since as far back as training camp and maybe a little before. Like, if you're going to really stick to what you're saying here, every position's open every week. We're going to have competition. Like, you got to go win the job.
Sure.
I forget what position we were even talking about. Maybe it was Derek Barnes playing ahead of Collins or something, but the players are going to notice if you don't have the best guy out there,
right,
at a position. Right, and if Jared Goff is playing like this, and I don't know, I kind of hesitate to go too far into this because I don't.
Boyle has to do his part too,
right? I don't know that Tim Boyle is like secret superstar that's just been waiting behind Aaron Rodgers all this time, and like you're going to put him out there and, you know, he's going to turn into like, I don't even.
And
like,
David Blau is a damn nice guy.
I don't even know what the upside is for Tim Boyle, but like that you've got this guy who's going to be a 10-year starter sitting there and you're just not using him. David Blau, I think we know, and I think they know that he's like a good guy to have around.
Great guy to have around.
He can start if you need him to. He probably should have played a couple series on Sunday because why not?
Right. Like, did Goff really need to keep going back out there getting food? But hey, maybe he did. Maybe that was Campbell challenging him too. We talked about that upstairs. Like, why is Goff still in this game? Yeah, I think that Campbell sends more lessons than probably we ever gave him credit for early, but it's starting to see. I'm starting to think that, though. Yeah, I think that this is going to be an interesting next couple weeks here.
I mean,
to see the response.
We should, like I said, I'm hesitant to go too far into this quarterback controversy direction.
Yeah, right. Because
there's
a lot going on here. Yeah, right.
And I would mention we saw Tim Boyle all August.
He wasn't good.
He was not good.
No,
he did. He does. I will say, give you more mobility. And the one thing he did consistently do throughout training camp was throw the ball downfield.
You're damn so maybe
that is enough to intrigue you. Right. That was it. Every throw was way down the field. So
yeah, Goff was the better quarterback in training camp, to be clear, by pretty much every metric. So
and now Boyle hasn't played. Right. And now Boyle's been out for 6 weeks. So, I don't know. I don't know that change is happening. But if you're 0-10 and this
is
the
player, that's what I mean. Yeah.
Like,
right.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe you kick the tires on something.
And that would involve maybe even changing the math on, and maybe that would be the result of like, hey, we've got our answer on Goff. We're going to figure out how to get out of this. And I don't know that we see that or don't. I don't know. It's all up to Goff, really, I think.
Well, but this is something else that we've talked about a little bit too. And I don't know. I just keep coming back to Brad Holmes and all this too, not just because of, you know, his faith, I guess, in Jared Goff, but just in sort of the pieces that are around him. You know, they've gotten hit by injuries, obviously. Like, this looks a lot different if Decker and Ragnow are there together the whole year and they've got their offensive line and Tyrell Williams is healthy and all that. But I don't know. Has Brad Holmes lost any of his grace period because of what the roster is right now, if that makes sense? Like, is there more pressure on him going into next offseason than maybe there would have been otherwise because things have gone so poorly with a lot of these additions he's made?
I think that I would look at it as there is going to be as much pressure on him as we originally thought there would be, and that the things he did this offseason weren't enough to relieve any of that. Does that make sense? I think that's how I look at it. Like, I don't think it's increased. Like, I don't think it's gotten worse, but I think it hasn't gotten any better. I don't think the moves that they've made in the offseason, which again, you know, although we'll see, because, you know, clearing the decks on some of that stuff and getting the comp picks, you know, that's part of it. And I think that was a big part of the strategy, of course. And we'll see what they do with those, and we'll see how that pays off.
But he drafted well.
Yes.
I mean, I think so.
I think so.
Without knowing what Sewell's going to be.
Solid, right? Like, I think that you're getting good stuff from Onsarike and McNeil. And, you know, Sewell continues to have struggles in the early parts of games, but then is really good for the last three quarters. I think he's going to be fine. St. Brown's playing better. Yeah, he's drafted fine, I think. You know, the quarterback situation is another matter that people can fairly criticize. But the player additions that they sort of were having to make with limited cap didn't do enough to, you know, if you look across the board, you know, Jamal Williams has certainly helped them. You know, I'm sure there's somebody I'm forgetting here off the top of my head, but like, it's just not enough. And I mean, it's not enough, and it's not going to be enough to change the fact that you're going to enter next year's draft with just everything. You got to get everything still, like, you know, and I think that that's, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I guess that's the thing, right? Is like, are you going to be able to go 6 weeks? And if we get into week 13, are you going to be able to look at Derek Barnes and say, okay, like, we're not too worried about his spot anymore? I don't know. Maybe that changes. But I still think that more or less, he's going to have a really damn good draft again and a really good offseason. And I mean, I guess that's the other thing too, to talk about, or at some point would be like, I don't know what kind of money he's going to have this winter, if at all. And does that mean that they don't have any until next winter? You know, that's another part of the equation as well. But he doesn't have any room for error, that's for sure. That hasn't changed, I don't think. Would you agree, or would you see it differently?
No, I'd agree. I mean, I think, again, it's hard because we knew how tough this was going to be anyway. And then they basically lost, like, 7 of their 10 best players
right.
to injury. So, you know, you didn't really have those reserves in the first place. And so I think you take away those guys and it looks the way it does right now. And I think the key is not just drafting well, but like Jerry Jacobs was an undrafted guy. Right. They're going to have to find some of those. Campbell's said it from the moment he got hired. Like, we're going to have to, we're going to have to bring some guys along pretty quickly, develop some under the radar guys. And I think that they're doing that. I mean, I think Melifonwu looked like a usable player before he got hurt in the little bit we saw him.
Cephas,
you know,
better.
Sewell's got to be really good. Like, that's going to be the key to this draft class. But yeah, I mean, I think the draft at least is encouraging. And then, yeah, you got to sort of see what this looks like. I don't know. I don't know how much they open the checkbook in the offseason. I think that's one of the things that'll be interesting. And I also don't know. This is not going to be an easy situation to sell the free agents.
No way.
Season.
I wouldn't want to open it too much next year. No way.
Right.
I think you can maybe like, but I think what you could do is like maybe invest a little bit more at some of those spots where they tried to sort of like piecemeal it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like whatever they paid Williams, you know, for the, you know, wide receiver. Well, you go out and pay a little bit more maybe next year for maybe a little bit better of a wide receiver in that situation. But I don't know. It's definitely interesting to see how this is all going to go here. But I think
you're right. I don't think it's changed that much because I think most of the season was about just figuring out who's going to be here.
Yeah,
you know, who's a piece that you can keep. And so I think that they're still in that process. But I do think that, like, if you fast forward to week one of next year and Melifonwu is pushing for a starting job and McNeil and Onsarike are playing up front and Okwara's back and Julian Okwara's playing. Like, yep. I think and the offensive line is healthy. Like, I think there's a lot of stuff here that you look at and say, all right, this could be decent next year.
Right.
So I'm with you. I don't think the pressure's necessarily changed, but it is, I think you said it to me in the press box, that at some point, Holmes probably needs to untether himself from Jared Goff.
Right. Yeah, I think so too. Or at least the idea that he drafted him or whatever.
Right. Well, it's very, well, but now twice. Like, it's out there that he banged the table for him in LA, and now he came here and they had other options at quarterback, or they could have just traded Stafford and gone and signed Tyrod Taylor or some stopgap for a year, and they wanted,
taking the Panthers trade or whatever. Yeah, right.
To some extent, they wanted Goff. I mean, I think the rest of that trade, you know, they wanted the pick for sure. They, you know, and the Rams needed to make that work. So, but I think they had at least some part of Brad Holmes wanted Goff here. And so if Goff, I don't know. There, there's always going to be pressure on who's going to be your quarterback, but that's probably the one spot where it's cranked up, because it's like, is this really what he thinks an NFL franchise quarterback is going to be? And I don't know.
I mean, if you want a guy who can just get you through a game, get one that can run. Like, that's what I would say. And I think that, and the more we talk about this, and we're going to talk about it a ton, of course, in the coming months with the quarterback thing, they can do this a thousand different ways. Like, do you go target one at the top of the first, or do you wait on a developmental guy and say, we are going to just ride out the smoke with this here, and you guys can just deal with it, and we'll get a younger guy in the later rounds, and we'll see what happens. I don't know. There's a bunch of different things they can do with it, but, like, I mean, I would say that if you want to just build a really good team around a quarterback, get a quarterback that can run. Like, that's what my suggestion would be, but, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Well, right, because you either need to have, like, you either need to be Brady, who's just elite at standing in the pocket, or Stafford and have one of the best arms in football, or you need to have someone who can get out of there, right, and, you know, get you 3 yards when it looks like you're going to get sacked. I think that's important, so I'm with you there. I did want to talk here for a few minutes, mostly because I mentioned your podcast you do with Brendan. You're covering Michigan State on top of the Lions. And so this is a pretty interesting fall for you, because the Lions are the worst team in football. Michigan State are one Pat Fitzgerald visit to the big house from...
They are.
I don't know. Is this
Armageddon?
At least one of the biggest games in the rivalry's history next week in East Lansing. And so people always kind of ask me, and I'm sure you get those questions too, like, are you rooting for teams to win? Is it more fun to cover a team that's winning, all that?
Yeah.
Is it more fun to cover the college teams right now than it is to cover the Lions? Like, how?
Oh, yeah, by a thousand miles. This is way better than last year. Last year was a total disaster when everyone was horrible. but now it's been much better with the colleges to watch them. Yeah, it's funny how you sort of see some of those issues that kind of creep up at a lower level that can sort of linger at a large level. The weird thing, too, here is that, like, all the Lions have so many young players that are all, like, college age type kids, so their mentalities a lot of times I feel like are very similar. So almost it feels like I'm almost watching three college teams. Not to completely up on the Lions there, but no, yeah, it's been definitely different. The mood on Lions games when both Michigan and Michigan State are bad from the fans is usually really, really nasty. Like, I've noticed that, like, it's really nasty. And when they're both doing well, the mood on Lions games from the fans is usually pretty chill. So, like, that has been a good byproduct that I've seen. So, but yeah, so far so good in that front. We'll see how this, if they're both undefeated, I think that'll be the first time since 1964 that both teams would enter maybe this far along or something as top 10 teams. I think that maybe that's what it was. Undefeated top 10 teams. So pretty wild, but certainly more interesting than the Lions on Sundays. But yeah, the Lions, I mean,
I've heard other writers say that bad teams are almost more enjoyable to cover because there's more storylines.
And yeah,
sometimes that's true.
It depends.
Sometimes it's not.
Like, it depends. Yes, great point. It depends on the situation. That's a great point. Like, this situation here. This Lions team is not like a slog to cover as much as you would probably think. I don't think. I mean, the games are tough to watch, but the process of rebuilding for me has sort of been interesting. And it just got off. They just got off of the toxic disaster, right? Like, but you don't want to cover Patricia. Like, that was a disaster. He was like, everyone was miserable. The players were miserable. They didn't want to talk about anything. Everyone hated everything. The coaches didn't want to talk about anything. They were nervous. They were scared. Patricia was Patricia. And there it was. It was a complete mess. If you look at this, there's still a mess on the field. But, like, people are excited to be there. They're willing to talk, right? Like, those are when the mood of the team is in, like, a positive place. Even if they're bad, which can happen, depending on the situation. Sure. That's what you want. Because, like, Michigan last year was a toxic disaster, and they've been able to flip themselves into, like, an enjoy. So if you're around those guys now, they're, you know, they have fun. Like, you know, they give you better quotes. They give you better stories. They give you better whatever. Like, they're more willing to talk to you about stuff. It's just, that is the thing that you want to avoid. What we had to cover really the last 2 years with Patricia, which is just like the everyone is miserable all the time. This is a total nightmare. Like,
yeah,
there's nothing you can do about it. It's I don't even know how that would be if they were good. I feel like that would be tough to cover even if they were good. And yeah, a Patricia, you know,
that's
what I mean?
Probably true. It's a little tougher now too. I know you don't get locker room access
with
college, Michigan State anyway, but it's a little different without having the locker room access, because my first year for the Athletic with the Lions was the last Jim Caldwell year, and they had some big games that year. They had some exciting wins, and the locker room after those wins, like, you wanted to get down there and be in there because guys were having fun, and they would say some, you know, they'd tell you everything that you wanted to know about the game.
Right.
And then, you know, the first Patricia year, the second Patricia year, when we were able to get in the locker room, they'd lose. Patricia would do his press conference. Stafford would do his press conference. And then they'd open the locker room. And guys would take that interim to shower and get the hell out of there. And there'd be like four guys in there. And they were all miserable.
so horrible.
The same generic quotes every week. And so I don't know. I think that it's hard. It's a little harder to say not having the locker room. But I don't know. I do think it's there's something to be said for covering teams that are going well. I mean, I think just the, like you said, the vibe is
hope. You need hope of
way
any kind.
Different.
like any kind of hope. And it's like grace periods, right? Those types of things. Like, nobody's trying to fire Dan Campbell, right? He doesn't have a clock. That's such a big part of it too when you're covering these football teams. And I think that's different than probably, and it's probably catching up, but it is different than most other sports. I feel like the intensity of a football season and what that does, you know, to a coach and how people view that coach, there's nothing else like it. It changes. I mean, my God, it changes so rapidly. Like, all the years I've thought over the years, every time I would go, you know, when I was covering Michigan just as a beat writer every day, every time I would go to that Ohio State game at the end of the year, it would be this, like, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. I don't know what's going to happen the next day. I don't know what's going to happen in the next 3.5 hours, but it's everything tomorrow is going to be completely different than it was when I woke up today. Like, that, that's like, that doesn't happen as much in the NFL, I guess. And like, the pressure there and that sort of thing, I think that that's something that we often maybe forget about.
Yeah. I mean, I'll add too, we're obviously not like sitting up in the press box cheering one way or the other. I will admit that I think we both cracked up a little when they scored to cut it to, Lions scored to cut it to 34-11, and the dude comes on the
video board
to sing the press conference, or sing the press conference, sing the fight song. let me hear you.
He did it like, twice, even after they got the two, he did it again.
500 people in the crowd. but we're not sitting up in the press box cheering. We're not, like, I've sort of explained it to people, like, either way, we have to work, whether they win or lose.
Right, you know?
Like, I got to write a story either way, so it doesn't necessarily impact me that much. I will say, we both grew up around here. My dad still texts me during the game.
My kid,
despite me telling him to just, like, go outside and stop, do something, wears his Lions gear every Sunday and wants to watch the game. So, I mean, I think we at least appreciate just how difficult this is for the fans. And I think that, like, selfishly, too, I mean, draft time for us is exciting because people are excited. And so if they were to win, I think we, that would be great if people were more excited after games on Sundays.
It'd be so much better.
So, but you know, that stops short of cheering for wins and losses. But I think we understand what a win would do.
I wrote this the other day, or maybe it was or last week, about Michigan and Michigan State. And I would say the same thing for the Lions. People here deserve, okay, and have earned to watch two top 10 college football teams, Michigan and Michigan State, play a game basically in November with Big Ten championship stuff on the line, playoff implications on the line, the whole shot. You're both good. They've earned that, okay, over the last however many years. They've also, over the last 70,000 years, earned something from the Lions that could be construed as, like, you know, positive or good or like a nice break or whatever. And I think over the years, and like you said, like, having grown up here, I think we probably see it differently maybe than some who wouldn't. But because that's what it is. I mean, I still remember growing up as a kid and the Lions were horrible, but you watched the Lions, like, with your parents, you know, like, that's what it was. Like, I remember what that was like. And, you know, it's interesting when they were playing the when Calvin Johnson came out and Sheila Ford got booed and Martha got booed at the game the other week.
Yeah. Right.
And that was the big moment that everybody remembered. And I think Pat McAfee made fun of it on a WWF pay-per-view that night. So, you know, all that stuff. But what I took away from that whole rigmarole, one of the parts of what I took away from that, they showed clips of Calvin's video on the board and when he talked to the fans at the enshrinement. You know, when he said, you guys were there when we were 0-16. You were there when we were in the playoffs. You were there when we fell out of the playoffs. You never go away. Like, I've seen that my whole life. So I, you know, when we get those questions about your thoughts on all this, like, yeah, we totally understand everything everyone's going through and would also completely agree that, you know, people have earned something different, you know, or at least the opportunity to see something different, I would say. And that's, we totally understand that.
And that's what Campbell said at the start. Like,
all the way, yeah.
If you win here, it would be unlike anything
anywhere
else in the league.
Right.
Just because there's so much pent-up frustration. I think if they draft a quarterback next year, we would see some of that come back for a little while.
Yeah,
just the excitement there. So,
probably.
I don't know. This week, I guess we should, as we close here, I don't know if this one's been circled on the calendar, if people are dreading this week, the trip to LA. I'm sure Jared Goff and I don't know that Matthew Stafford, people were talking after the game like, oh, Matthew Stafford probably wants to hang.
Yeah, right. I was like, I don't know.
Why? Why would he?
Lions just gave him a Super Bowl.
They traded him to the team he wanted to go to. They, you know, went out of their way to do him a favor.
Might take an L.
I think he might just, you know, I think he'd prefer to get up like 24-0 at halftime and run the ball and get out of there as fast as possible. Maybe I'm misreading it, but
no, I think that's how that would.
That's my sense, and I think Jared Goff probably would. I mean, I'm sure he'd like to go in there and stick it to Sean McVay, but also would prefer to just not have this week be happening.
I think it's probably a little bit of both. I think he would probably prefer maybe more to just not even have it happening, but it would probably be nice to stick it to him because we also saw McVay's already pulling out his. Oh, and, you know, I feel bad now, you know. or whatever, it's like, shut up, man, for the love of God. You hated him, you wanted him gone, you wanted Stafford, you got what you wanted, just shut up and go coach football.
Snuck down to Mexico to meet Stafford on vacation.
Enough of your narrative bullshit, like, stop. Like, I can see maybe Goff not really wanting to go through this, more than maybe even Stafford, to be quite honest with you. There's just not as many guys on this team that Stafford, you know, was close with. There's still some, of course, but there's not that many left, I wouldn't think, right? Like, the roster has changed so much.
I don't think Stafford is like, I don't think he's having nightmares about this game.
I don't think he cares either way, really.
I don't understand the, like, revenge game narrative.
Sure, like, there'll be like staffers and equipment people and people that he hasn't seen that he likes, that he's friends with, that he'll, you know, right, that he'll get to see on Sunday, and I'm sure he's excited for that, but like, I don't think beyond that it's anything, I promise you it's nothing other than a football game for him, and when he tells you that, I can't imagine there's anything more to it.
Just in the scope of this Lions season, it's interesting for all the reasons we talked about at the start, like they got embarrassed on Sunday and Dan Campbell called them out and called out the coaching staff and Goff was bad. And so this is, you kind of want to see how they respond. And so if they get beat, I mean, the Rams are in another universe compared to the Lions talent wise, but if they come out and get beat 45-0 on Sunday, that's not a great sign.
Not good.
After what happened this past week. So I think if you just take away the Stafford and Goff stuff and the, you know, Holmes going back and McVay and all this, just in terms of seeing how the Lions react to what happened, I think this is an important moment for them because maybe they do hang in there. Like, I think that'd be a great sign for them. If they get to halftime and it's 13-10, say, all right, well, now guys are back. Like, everything's sort of resettled and they're back to where they were in week 5.
Go fight and go throw some sand in the gears of the perfect football team and see if they have to sweat for 4 quarters. That's what you do in this game. That's what you do every game. That's all he wants all year long. Go fight and screw up someone Sunday, right? Go make Sean McVay have to think about what contradictions he's going to have to walk back after the game that he talked about all last. Like, that's what you're trying to do here on Sundays with your Lions. Go compete, go fight, go try to mess it up and see what happens. Like, And as we've seen this year, they have enough to do that.
Yeah.
To a degree, you know, obviously with a team like the Rams being so good, it's going to be harder to do it for longer, but like that's, you know, that's where you start. That's how you learn how to win. And I think that you talk to coaches like Campbell about, you know, how do you learn how to do this? How do you learn how to do that? How do you learn how to run a 2-minute drill as a quarterback? You do it by going out there and doing it, right? Like that's, so you start at the bottom, you go scrap, and you go see if you can screw up somebody's day, and that's how it has to be. That's how the mindset has to be. And I think that's what Campbell sort of talked about all year when he talked about in camp, you know, that we're going to go out here and stretch, and we're going to stretch the shit out of it for 20 minutes, and it's going to be an amazing stretch, and then we're going to do this, like, and it's going to be, you know, as good as we can do it. That's how you, everything has to just be one thing at a time, go all the way back to that, and don't worry about it. And I think maybe it's a good thing that you're going on the road, right? It's going to be a national game. Yeah. All anyone wants to talk about is how great Stafford is and how shitty the Lions are. Use it, right? Yeah. Like, you don't have, no one's expecting to go win the game, but like, you know, equip yourself, or, you know, quit yourself a little better, I think would be, like you're saying, like hang in there and fight and see if you can, you know, make them sweat a little longer than they're comfortable with. I think that's probably the goal.
Yeah. I mean, odds are you're probably going to get like 400 yards and 4 touchdowns from Stafford, but maybe you get one of those games where he tries to do too much and he makes a couple mistakes,
right?
Kind of hang around and make this interesting.
Maybe Goff ropes one in there a couple times and you get a cut, you know, like, I don't know, like it's an NFL game. Like stuff happens. I think that you just block it all out and see if you can go screw it up. That has to be the message. And you know, in that case, I think that's probably the best operation for the Lions is just, you can't worry about anything but your own, you know, thing every single step of the way. They just don't have enough right now to get so inundated with what the other side's doing. It has to be more about themselves, which is hard to do in the NFL, but you know, that's how it has to be right now.
All right. Well, you can get our podcast one of these years on the Athletic app ad free. Get over to theathletic.com. If you don't have a subscription, you can just click through any story you see and pull up whatever deal we've got running at the time. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, all the normal spots. We'll be back again next Tuesday to break down whatever happens in LA and see how Jared Goff responds and how this team responds and how mad Dan Campbell is.
All the above.
And then preview the Week 8 game a little bit with the Eagles coming to town. I'm sure won't be talking too much about that one regardless.
Brendan Quinn is very excited for that game.
Brendan might talk about it.
He's
a little,
getting tickets, otherwise. Yes.
so yeah, we'll be back next week with another episode of the show. Thanks to everyone who's been listening and rating and reviewing us, subscribing, all those things. We appreciate it. So for Nick, I'm Chris. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon.